Welcome to the Old Republic Podcast.
We're a podcast that discusses Star Wars, Knights of the Old Republic, general sci-fi, and about the stories that inspired a galaxy.
Consider this a spoiler warning for everything under the sun and the twin suns in that galaxy far, far away.
This is where the fun begins. All right, everyone, welcome back to the Old Republic Podcast. Today we are joined by none other than Joseph David Spence, who was kind enough to lend us his vast talents in the audio drama. So today we're going to be specifically talking about KOTOR story part 2, Bastila Identity. And Joseph David Spence was in charge of doing the music, the composing, this time around. You might remember we talked to him kind of in the behind the scenes for part 1, you know, doing the voice of Malik there, and another one. Name is totally escaping me right now.
Saul. Hi, everybody. It's me.
I was two people, and now I'm doing another thing. He was two people, and now he is doing the composing. That's a third person, and then, spoiler, he's going to be back to do some more Malik stuff in part 3, in the music there, too. But today, specifically, we're talking about Bastila Identity, part 2, because it's going to be coming out, or it already is out. You know, we're kind of in the world between worlds here on the Old Republic Podcast, so depending on when you're listening to this, you may have already heard the music, or you might be getting it teased to you right now. Going to play a little bit of it, and then let Joseph introduce himself. So, Joseph, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. How are you doing today? And tell everyone a little bit about your background as far as doing music work like this is concerned.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Old Republic Podcast. Let's see. For music, that's a longer story. And I know I tend to get pretty long-winded when it comes to stories in general. So before I was doing voice acting, I was doing this music thing. Composing is like, that's the thing I went to school for, and music and everything in general. It's all Star Wars' fault still.
As are most things.
I mean, there's a whole generation of folks who, and this includes me, and it also includes my dad, who did a lot of work in film composition, and that's the reason why I got into it, really. But yeah, I think I told this story last time I was on here, seeing episode 1 for the first time, 5 years old, and doing the title crawl and all that stuff. But yeah, man, I still hold to this day that the best out of all of the Star Wars scores, including the original trilogy, I think you have everything that you need and more in the episode 1 score. Everybody goes ham about Duel of the Fates, and it's really great. But man, if you haven't had the chance, there's a specific album of the episode 1 score where it's got Darth Maul's face on it, and he's kind of going blah on it, but it's blue. It's two discs, but it's every single cue in episode 1 from the 20th Century Fox theme all the way through the end credits, and then they do this little cute thing of Duel of the Fates with like the actors speaking over it. Feels very cinematic, but it's so
that
good.
Is cool.
Yeah, it's such a cool thing. Anyways, how did I get started writing music? Yeah, I think it was just a thing of a couple of specific memories, one of which was Star Wars. And then I do remember my dad was working on he was doing the music for a PS1 or PS2 video game that ended up going nowhere. But I remember just watching and listening to the music he was making, and then watching like the video game stuff happen on the screen. And I'm like, this is the coolest. Can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
This is the coolest fucking thing that I've ever seen. I didn't know what that word was back then, but and I listened to that. That was my I listened to that suite of music that he wrote for like 3 years nonstop. Just like, this is the coolest freaking thing. And then, yeah, I got shown the ropes of there was another program back in the day. There used to be magazines about computers and computer programs. specifically for like Macintosh. Before Apple was a thing, it was Macintosh computers, and there was a magazine called Mac Addict that my dad would get. And what was so cool about it is in every issue of the magazine there was also a CD with a bunch of demos for different programs and games. And that's how most of the video games that I played as a child came from those, including, you know, Unreal Tournament, Rune, Star Trek Elite Force, StarCraft, etc., all through the Mac Addict CDs. But there was one, also another program that I got my hands onto, which was called, Groove Machine. And it was very rudimentary. You got a bunch of loops, and it was basically a DJ program for like early 2000s, you know, kind of techno, house music kind of stuff. But I got my hands on that, was messing around with it, and then did that enough where my dad saw me doing it. It was like, it's time. It wasn't in this voice, but it felt like it's like, it's time we got you in the big leagues. And then I started working with Logic, which is the same DAW, digital audio workstation, that I work with today, and started writing my own sort of music there. There's a couple of, I know I have some like early stuff that is, I think, lost to the sands of time and hard drives, etc. But like the first thing that I wrote for sure and like shared and is still somewhere on my SoundCloud, I'm sure, but it's I did when I was 12, and it was very fun, very cool. And yeah, started writing music for film, like professionally getting paid to do so when I got out of high school.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, just, I mean, nothing huge, but I wrote a queue of music that got into like some Hallmark movie shot in all Canadian folks, and there was a dog.
That's the big leagues.
Yeah, I don't think it actually made it onto Hallmark. It was probably, I think it was like, yeah, a straight to DVD home video thing. It was about, you know, a dog trying to save Christmas, you know, the usual thing. But yeah, the cue that I got was this very like emotional thing with the main girl. Her mom died, and she's going through all the stuff with her dead mom and all the stuff. And I got to write that, and that was very fun. And apparently the director had no notes for that cue, and the little theme that I wrote for the dead mom got used throughout the rest of the movie, which was very fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then yeah, I went to school, got my first piece of paper in not writing music, but playing it. I'm also in addition to doing all of these other things, one of the hats that I wear is I am a saxophonist. I play classical saxophone. I'm currently in a saxophone quartet that plays in and around LA. We're having a good time. But I got my first degree in that, but was also still writing music, and kind of switched into the concert music scene. It's a lot more fun getting real people to play your stuff instead of trying to make the sounds in your box work and sound real. And then went to grad school, kept doing that, and then suddenly, you know, after the pandemic, I've with all of this resurging in podcasts, I've been writing a lot more music for podcasts and audio dramas lately, which is very, very fun. I think I said this last time, it's a very different skill set because you don't have the visual sort of medium to lean on. I think you got to do a little more work, I don't think the music has to do a little more work. It's that the medium relies on the music more than it would in a movie or something with visuals. I think that's the end of my rant.
Yeah, so that's a pretty cool origin story, and like I didn't know most of that, so that was cool to hear, and I'm sure our listeners think it's cool. So yeah, Star Wars, like, I mean, we have a Star Wars podcast, but like it's kind of amazing like how many people it inspired, like whether they're, you know, like in, you know, showbiz or just like, you know, just regular people, you know, like it inspired them to be more creative. But I think like that's probably the number one most influencing like series out there, you know. So, yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Especially music wise. I mean, John Williams changed the game in a lot of ways.
John Williams, like, I don't know how, I don't know, like, what the music space will look like without him. Maybe Hans Zimmer will kind of be the new John Williams, but, yeah, like, there's so much cool, musical cues that he did, and also just in films like Ennio Morricone, Hans Zimmer. There's lots of talented people out there. So,
yeah. And yeah. Listen, if we want to talk about film composers, we'd be here for 3 hours and it would just be 3 hours of me just talking at you guys. But, yeah. I just to kind of piggyback off of what you're saying, I'm really encouraged by some of the new composers that are popping up. Like all of the work that Ludwig Göransson has done,
with
Black Panther, but also The Mandalorian, Tenet, what was the most recent thing he did? Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I loved the score in Oppenheimer. I'll have to see Tenet again, or maybe I'll just listen to the score of Tenet so I can actually hear it, you know?
Yeah, it's really good. It's really wild. And all the stuff that he does, that he plays with time, but all of that still ties into the story. He's really good at doing the job of every film composer, which is telling the story through the music somehow, and having the music be a character in it. But yeah, there's a bunch of folks cropping up, and they're all really talented. The thing that probably keeps the film score, you know, the film composer landscape from doing that John Williams thing is that what John Williams does is really intricate. I mean, man's doing old school stuff, and if you want, we can go into the weeds on what exactly. I'm not sure how valuable that would be for your listeners, but like, it's really like what you hear is for the most part what he writes on pencil on paper, sitting down at his piano. And I personally, I don't have to do that, and I also just don't have the training. I could. It would be a lot longer of a process, and just, you know. But yeah, so what John Williams has done is so complex, and that's part of the reason why it's so good, and he knows exactly what to do and all that stuff after a lifetime of doing this. The other thing is, though, is that like to a lot of producers and directors and sort of studio folks, that is a quote unquote old fashioned sound, and most of them, like there's a part of the craft that is very difficult, and then there's just a part of the ethos and the understanding of what that sound is that is just alien now to most folks. Like if you take a listen to the difference in quality, I'm gonna get myself in trouble here. There's a very distinct difference in the sequel trilogy between the music that John Williams got asked to write between episodes 7 and 9 and what Rian Johnson had him write in episode 8. And out of those three, you know, not my favorite movies by any stretch, and you know, The Last Jedi being very controversial, etc., but out of those three, man, The Last Jedi score works so much more than the kind of other, the stuff happens cues that go on in episode 7 and 9.
Yeah, it might be controversial, but I kind of agree. Because I think, like, for 7 and 9, they're just like, people want the old stuff, just kind of, like, make it sound like the old stuff. But I kind of think, like, in the development of episode 8, I mean, like, in The Force Awakens, at least we had Rey's theme. I think that's a good song.
Oh, yeah. And it's great. It's so good. And John Williams is like, oh, yeah, this was super great. I love doing this.
Yeah. But I kind of feel like he was kind of given room to create in The Last Jedi. So, yeah. So probably at that point that we said that, like, our listeners tuned out. But I guess we could kind of – so that kind of talks about, like, kind of like how your origin story, I guess, like, and your inspiration and, like – and then – part one, of course, was of our audio drama Bastila Strike was composed by Dennis. But
Dennis, whose name
know.
I butchered last time I was on here,
yeah.
and who I have since apologized to. But yeah, Dennis is great. Yeah. His music was amazing.
Yeah, and he just had like, you know, like work stuff, real life stuff, and scheduling conflicts. So I was like, does anyone know, like, a composer? Like, and a lot of people referred me to you, and I said, would that be something you'd be interested in? And here you are scoring parts 2 and 3 of our audio drama. I say triptych, but maybe trilogy is a word that trends better, you know?
I like triptych, though, because the the story ain't done. With 3,
yeah.
But it is this little snapshot into a character-specific thing. To me, a triptych makes more sense. Don't ask me to spell that word, but it's a better word, I think.
It's just a word if you go to a museum, people, like, the museum staff will just appreciate you more, I think, you know?
Plus, we gotta figure out a way to, you know, open up and swing open the doors like most triptychs have. You swing it on the hinges and you see all 3. You gotta figure out a way to do that for the audio drama.
Yeah. So Strike was kind of very much like a space battle and then lightsaber battle. And then part 2 is much more of a conversation. And I think, like, we kind of listened to it and... It starts, you know, on Dantooine, and I was like, ooh, I love Dantooine, and I was like, can we kind of make the sound like, you know, like, in Dune, like, what's their name?
The Bene Gesserit.
Yeah. They come up, like, some chanting, and I'm like, can we get, like, some, like, Star Wars-y, like, Gregorian chants, because, like, I kind of just wanted to emphasize the Jedi Council is powerful, but they maybe interfere more than they should, and maybe they're too rigid in their thinking, and I just thought it would sound different and cool. What did you kind of think about the beginning of part 2?
Yeah, well, do we want to play any of that for your audience, and then we can kind of talk about it after?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the first cue from that. And yeah, I remember Cassia, your specific asks were Bene Gesserit specific. I wrote down on my sheet Bene Gesserit whispers, yeah. And I was like, ooh, I love that. I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try. And that's most film composers for anything. I was like, I love that so much. I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try. And yeah, this sort of foreboding vibe throughout the beginning. I feel like so much of that, of this second episode, like there was one sort of musical motif is this idea of just like it's raining the whole time. It is dark and not necessarily dark and stormy, but dark and raining. And there is this sense of a Pyrrhic victory of we did the thing, but it's not what the Jedi wanted. And sort of seeing the lack of moral righteousness in sort of the good guys, and having Bastila specifically reckon with that was very fun to sort of go into. I pulled a lot out of the John Williams prequel Standing, Walking, and Talking musical bag, but it's such a good bag to pull from. So you probably heard a couple of things, lots of voices in the beginning, not only the whispery female kind of chanty bits, mm-hmm. But also like, and I think in the original game score, a lot of Bastila's musical themes were female choir. And I could be wrong. I haven't listened to that score in a while, but using that this sort of female choir juxtaposed with that sort of Gregorian chant kind of vibe was I felt fit also fit the vibe that you specifically requested as well, which was I want it to feel ancient. And for Hans Zimmer in Dune, he went to the complete other side of the world, and I kind of stayed within the European sort of ancient musical landscape that we're a little more familiar with that. In terms of themes in this first opening cue, the big one is Bastila's theme, which shows up throughout the whole dang score, but it shows up in the French horns in the very opening before we get any narration, and then kind of continues throughout in that the female vocals. That's usually where I try to put it. But then we also get a little sneak peek of what's his name in this? Vanar's Revan? Theme. Well, oh. it is actually no, you're right. This is Revan's theme specifically. And that shows up in some trombones later. My leitmotif best. But
a lot of people it's kind of like they play Scrabble with Revan's name, and it's like I thought all of the options had been taken, but I was like, oh, Vanar, we'll call him Vanar. So
no, Vanar's great. And there is a Vanar theme, but that shows up later in the episode.
Yeah. And then I think like something people don't realize is like John Williams, you know, and like, and sometimes just in movies, like they're silent sometimes, like there's no score just so you can hammer home things. Cause like when we're looking at the Jedi Council talking, it's kind of just mostly a conversation with no musical score. And that was kind of a choice I think we kind of made when we were discussing and listening to it for the first time.
Yeah. If I remember right, part of the reason why is sometimes music can get in the way of the story. And the typical rule of thumb is if there's a bunch of dialogue going on, you don't want a lot of music hammering around with that, which of course is really is a funny thing to say when it's an audio drama, and that's all anybody else is doing is talking the whole time, which is they're fun to score. But so there's that logistical part of it, but then there's also just the idea of, I think the conversation is much more theatrical and tenser without, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, I definitely agree. So maybe like I should just produce this as like a play or something and where people can see it, and maybe just change some of the names so they can't be like, this is a KOTOR fanfic, right? You know, it's like, no, it's about religion, you know?
And yeah. For you, I wish you and your special effects budget all of the best of luck for that play.
I guess only part two and maybe parts of three could be a play, but yeah. Maybe it could be a closet play, which is like, you know, back in the day, like things that were written as plays but could never be produced due to like budgetary restraints. But yeah, anyways, so Star Wars audio drama. I like literature, I'm sorry, but when the council kind of decides like we're gonna you know, give Revan a new identity, wipe away his memories and everything and have him, you know, work for us, I was kind of like, I kind of want it to be like a powerful like force theme, like kind of more primal, like something powerful is happening. Like maybe it's like, you know, when you're in the ocean and you get hit by a really big wave, you know, like, is it good or bad, or did it just happen to you? And
well, we do have the cue before that scene too, where Bastila.
Okay. How about you tell me about that, because you're, you know, the musical artiste. So
I'm just writing music to what you guys all did. Yeah, so this is it. The point in that whole council conversation where they're trying to figure out what all to do with Bastila now that she kind of did the mission, but really didn't do the mission because Revan's still alive. Oh God, what do we do with him now?
Yeah.
And this is the scene where I think it starts with Vrook, played by the wonderful Marcus Moseley. Telling Bastila to kneel, there's this whole thing that happens that's a bit of a turn. I forgot what our rules are on spoilers.
You can spoil away.
Yeah. So Vrook says kneel, Bastila. You're so powerful. You're so talented as a Jedi. You're so wonderful. He grabs her braid, and she thinks, oh my God, this is my moment. I'm getting a promotion. And he's like, psych, nope, you didn't do what we wanted to do. Also, you look like shit. Why don't you go get some sleep? Because you looked, I think one of the lines is you look tired.
Yeah.
So there's that whole thing, which is very fun. But yeah, so musically, I was like, okay, well, This is our moment to do a binary sunset that's not on Tatooine, because of copyright infringement reasons. But so it's very much like the I'm trying to do a force theme without doing the force theme thing, and it's and then it turns and kind of talking about what you were saying about like music not being over dialogue. There is a trick. In trick of the trade, where instead of, you know, in a fight scene, if somebody hits somebody, you might do something musically to be like bang, wham, bow with instruments. There's also the opposite effect where the music all fades away so that what is happening on screen or with our characters can be emphasized more. And so the music cuts away, right? I think right when he says, however, and comes back and completely turns on its head when he says, I think the line is, you have proven yourself to be defiant. And on defiant, it's dun, dun, dun. I think it's literally dun, dun, dun. And kind of turns from there, as we get some more. I guess, yeah, the best word for that is sinister. Sinister Jedi Council music, as they're treating our girl Bastila, they're doing her a dirty.
Yeah.
And she goes and cries about it.
Yeah, I guess she might be too exhausted to cry, but yeah, it's not a good moment. Like, just kind of falls asleep crying, I guess. But
crying is not the Jedi way.
Yeah.
We told you the Jedi way. Sorry, that's spoilers.
Yeah. We don't care about spoilers. So if anything, it gets people hooked. It gets people interested. You
well,
know, but
it's also, I have listened to this thing back. Again, between you and me, Brian, we know this thing backwards and forwards.
That's right. Part three, I definitely know backwards and forwards. Part two was a little bit easier because it was just laying down some atmosphere and then letting you come in, do your musical trick, right? I just had to get the soundscape of some, I don't know, some rock walls and some candlelights. That was all I needed for part
and
two.
And rain. So. Don't forget about the rain.
There's some rain.
Yeah.
Now that's a spoiler.
The rain's a character in this one. So
It is, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of just wanted the council to kind of just seem like an extreme where Malak is kind of an extreme. They kind of like put limits on the Force. It's like they don't just say like think, use the Force, you know, like Qui-Gon would say probably. They say, like, be one with us and the Force. They're putting limits on the Force. Like, you have to adhere to their point of view before you can, you know, find the Force. So
yeah, it's very much that organized religion thing of, you know, yes, there is this omnipotent, ever-present source of divinity all around us that we are the mouthpieces for, so you have to do what we say.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I mean, like, maybe Revan, I mean, he did fall to the dark side, but, like, Qui-Gon, you know, of his time is probably more of a mystic than, like, you know, part of the orthodoxy of the Jedi Council, you know? I think that's like what Jedi probably should do, you know, Force users should do, is just kind of like find their own path than rather than like listen to like you know, Atris, but maybe that's just me. So yeah.
Well, that also might just be Atris. I completely agree. The Jedi are at their best when they are keepers of the peace and guardians of justice in the weak. And that usually happens when they are out in the galaxy and not all bottled up on Coruscant cops
and a high
to senators.
Okay, so now...
And then we do the thing you were talking about earlier.
The thing I was talking about earlier, when we were kind of talking about this cue, it's kind of like a ritual that the Jedi Council are doing. It's like kind of like ancient. And at first I was like, what are the words they would say, you know, for this? And then I was like, oh, I think it's just the Jedi code, you know? And then I was kind of like, when I was giving direction to you, it was like, it's powerful, it's primal, it's kind of like a wave. Like, is it good or bad? Who knows? But you got hit by a wave, you know? What kind of musical direction did you take this in?
Yeah, this is the most... This is probably the most different in terms of vibe that I've done in a long time. And this was really fun to do. Mostly because the one of the main features of the cue, well, you'll hear it in just a second. So one of the main features of this cue is this female choir that's different. It's a lot more strident than the sort of classical Gregorian in church thing. This is actually it's a sample library based off of the female singers. I forget what the name of this group escapes me, but they're like the Bulgarian women's folk choir.
Wow, thing. So cool.
And it's like, and you if you hear it, you're like, oh, I know exactly what that is. And it's, but it's like the coolest thing for me as a composer. I just have to hit a note, and if I just keep hitting that note, it sounds like I know exactly what I'm doing, and it's just like, it's so ready to go. And I was like, oh, this is exactly what this is going to be. This is going to be this sounds ancient, very chanty, but not sinister, because we can't. One of the things that was difficult was trying to convey this sense of like, you know, this isn't the best thing that we're doing here, and showing sort of that lack of moral righteousness with the Jedi Council and their actions, without going straight into that, you know, the Sith kind of dark side music, which is all very low male heavy choir stuff as well. That, you know, that sort of Darth Plagueis cue of just that sound.
Yeah,
couldn't do that, because that is, we Star Wars fans, we go, oh, dark side, but this is not dark side, it's something else. So that was fun to figure out how to do that, and then lots of big stankin' drums, and there's some didgeridoo stuff in there. But I think the tool bag that I pulled from for this one was not any kind of John Williams at all. Maybe a little bit of, in terms of Star Wars stuff, maybe a little bit of that Ludwig Göransson Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett kind of vibe. But really, if I'm being honest, they're one of my favorite groups in the last few years that I've discovered, and I've since seen them live. I have a band shirt. Is this Scandinavian quote-unquote metal group called Heilung. They don't do concerts. They do rituals. They go on stage. They have the main gal. There's three. It's three people: two guys and their singer gal named Maria Franz. And she's got these deer antlers coming out of this headdress. There's cloth covering her eyes, white makeup, and it's just like, wow, what world am I in right now? What year am I in? And it's this, but in the show is amazing, but the music is also just like so. It's nothing like you've ever heard. But the adjective to describe that is primal, and I was like, oh, let's see if we can do that. And it was very fun to go to that place, do some fun chanting. And then also have get the orchestra in there as well.
Yeah, and it sounded really cool. And I am so curious about like that group you said. It's Heilung, Scandinavian band. So
they don't pay me for this, but I will plug them because they're great. You can find them on Instagram as Amplified History. And then you spell the name of the group, Heilung. They got a few albums out, but it's nothing like nothing you've ever heard before. Certainly.
Yeah. Sounds like the movie The Northmen.
Very much like that. I think they're doing the music for the upcoming Hellblade game as well.
Oh, wow.
Oh, cool.
They're doing well for themselves. So
they're working, certainly.
Yeah. So I guess we can listen to A Dantooine Military Landing Pad, Dawn, A New Day.
I do. Can I talk a little bit about the first iteration of this cue?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah. So this one was the hardest, and not including the end credits because I went back and did that later. This one was the hardest for me to do because I knew this was the one where I was like, okay, we got to go full into this John Williams bag and just do all of the things in there, because there were so many. In the story here, there were so many little moments of emotional shift and character perspective that it was not only just mapping them out, but then kind of making a cohesive throughput throughout all of them. Lots of things for this one. So yeah, this is me doing the most John Williams, the John Williams of it all. And it was a blast to do so. And thank you. This was so much fun to be like, oh, I am now a better composer because I tried doing this. But was it interior or exterior Dantooine military landing pad?
Exterior, because
I figured it would be an exterior.
Outside.
But there's that ding that happens, and the original part, the original cue, beginning of this cue was very much, I was like, oh, it's Dantooine, it's the sun's rising, baby, we're ready to go. And I did this kind of Coruscant theme thing with just big brass tong, gong, 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 gong. And I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever done. And I finished the cue and I sent it off to Cassie, and she's like, yeah, this is all great, except that. Which is, that's the nature of the gig. You're completely right to do so. But I was like, oh, man.
I'm here to crush dreams, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Thankfully you knew what you wanted, which is the most frustrating. It was just like, I just don't like it. I'm like, well, I don't know how to do that. But that's not what you did. You said, I want it to be this. I want it to be the sun rising, over the meadow. There's still dew on the grass. You know, it's very calm. And I'm like, okay, I know how to do that. And that's, for me, that's code for, okay, clarinet solo.
Yeah. Coruscant. Crossed out. Clarinet solo.
Clarinet solo. Dawn over the grass. Fine. But yeah, this is the cue. Part of the reason why this was very fun was I really love this musical theme for Vanar, which is very different and distinct from Revan's theme, which is also kind of present throughout this whole thing. Revan's theme being that so bum 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 da da da. That's Revan's theme, but Vanar's theme is. It's similar to that, but I wanted to write this idea of nobility, where he's, ultimately a good dude, but there's just not something settled about him. It's always shifting. And in the, I'll go into a little bit of the weeds here in terms of music writing. So the way that I did that was I kept for most of those opening chords for the main nugget of that theme, we don't resolve to the tonic ever. We start with the harmony is always in this kind of first inversion, this first inversion chord that resolves upwards. But we never really resolve to the one we all or sort of our home base. I'm realizing how insane I sound.
But so it this could all go makes major sense or to minor. Me. You mean?
Well, there's this thing where if you put a major chord, but instead of having the first note of the chord be in the bottom and the bass, if you put the third of the chord in the bass instead, it kind of gives this feeling of just like there's something not quite right. It's a very unstable chord. It wants to go to a lot of places naturally, and I used a ton of that throughout Vanar's theme. There's even sort of there's a bunch of hidden key changes that happen as we're just shifting around. There's stuff that goes from major to minor. Yeah, his theme is still I feel still retains the sense of nobility, but is just moving all over the place where you're not quite sure who this guy is, and he's not sure who he is either. And that was really fun to not only write but to write but also then to kind of do the thing and put it in there. So lots of that, and that's probably the most prevalent theme throughout this whole cue.
Yeah. And then it was kind of fun to, like, I think when I was writing it, I was like, ooh, it'd be so cool if, like, Bastila is, like, observing Vanar, but Vanar doesn't know that she's observing him. And then she's visited by Trask. Yeah. Go ahead.
That was fun to give Trask. I gave Trask a little bit of a theme, or at least a moment where it was just big drums, big snare drum military march moment. I was like, this fits very well.
Yeah.
The moment where Trask and Bastila, there's the shift where Bastila asks Trask to take care of Ensign Vanar. Mm-hmm. I think is the first time that we really get her theme in ascendance, where it's not it's still this sort of melancholy motif and moment, but this sort of the sun is shining on her instead of it just being rain. And that shifting into kind of her this big sweeping moment of Vanar's theme as a, sort of a thing between a connection between the two of those characters, showing a brighter future. It's all going to a better place, and then it doesn't.
It just has to go to hell first, I guess, and then it sort of does. So yeah, because I was like, this is me enticing listeners to be excited for part three, like kind of like when it comes to like Revan and Bastila, like I think like the Force kind of wanted to balance out the galaxy, so you have Bastila on the light, Revan on the dark side, and the Force like kind of connects them, and kind of like I think like Revan kind of got lost, like I don't care about the Revan novel, like I'm like Sith Emperor who, like I flick him away, like don't care. You know, I think it was just kind of like, you know, the war kind of turned him, you know, but I think the Force is like wanting like Revan to be more balanced, not necessarily like has to be on the light side. And I think like maybe the Force is like this Jedi who's gifted with battle meditation is just kind of being kept under the thumb of the Jedi Council, you know. Maybe if these two meet, they'll be bonded, and like kind of like my thesis of KOTOR is like these two people like kind of each help each other become better people, you know, at different times. And who knows how will part three resolves, but like that's kind of how I overall see
KOTOR. We know how it resolves.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah. It resolves with Max Rebo like finding a holochronicle or a holochron in the future and telling the story of KOTOR through music. Yeah. So, yeah. And then I think I was like, for Exterior Space Day, it's not even like really a paragraph. I was like, 1 year later, the Endar Spire lists over Terrace as it is bombarded by Sith forces. And like, have you ever seen Timeless? Season 2, the finale.
Haven't seen it yet.
Nope.
Yeah, and you're like, no. And I was like, kind of, what if we evoke this music? And it's like, not John Williams, because I think like you're like, yeah, it could be like a nice like Lost in Space John Williams theme. And it's like, and I'm like, what if we do a cover of a Cyndi Lauper pop thing and just make it epic? we kind of came to an understanding, but like now looking back on it, I was like, my most of my musical cues, I'm like, I wasn't really suggesting John Williams stuff, so it was kind of funny.
Well, that's my bread and butter. Like, listen, if you want to just bring me on to rant about John Williams at a later point, I could.
Yeah.
I could. It'd be 2 hours long. It'd be great for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the ending of that is very, it's a little, I mean, it may be a little bit on the nose, but in terms of the feeling of, oh no, but it was fun to call back to, you know, the score that started it all with a little piccolo solo while we're in this sort of spacey thing. And the danger rises and rises and rises, and then big string run that gets us into the end credits, which are always fun, but. Did those last because I didn't know how many more themes there were going to be or how much time there was to stick them all in there. And just so for those listening at home, I don't know when this, if this is after or before, but yeah, so that first theme is Revan's theme with sort of the ritual vibe under it, followed by Bastila. And then we end off with some big old Vanar vibes.
Yeah, the credits sound awesome, and I think it's funny because this is like my first time really like ordering credits, so I was like, okay, Brian, let's see how long these are. How many seconds do you think we need? So then I think I was like, yeah, this many seconds, you know? So it was a learning experience for me, too. Mm-hmm. And
well,
just
you guys
the whole...
You guys were very kind with the placement of your credits, because you gave the music at least in the last version that I heard, you gave the music this big old headway start thing, and then when the credits sort of died down into Bastila's theme, you're like, okay, now we'll do the boilerplate. And I was like, yeah. That's very nice of you guys.
Yeah,
I tried to let it swell up there as much as I could, and then. It's kind of a fine line. You know, you'd mentioned it with the, you know, being the audio drama that it is, because we'll have the YouTube version, which will just have the credits, you know, on screen. But then on the version we release on the podcast, we'll have, you know, Cassie and I reading the credits. So I was trying to kind of balance that level of sound so we could, you know, get the voices in or not have
yeah.
the voices in. So it kind of made sense both ways. So.
And just for the BTS of it all, what I got sent was the video version of the credits. And use that as sort of a template for how much time I had to sort of divvy up that space with pure music.
You get two different experiences, so you can like both of them, you know, and listen to both of them, share them with your friends. And I think, like, it's funny because I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to talk with Joseph about the music in part three. It'll probably be a 30-minute conversation, and I think it was like an hour and 45 minutes. Regret it, so, yeah.
It always takes longer than you think. Yeah, have we talked about, just, again, I'm all about the BTS, and if this is the film score or the music score episode, do you want to kind of talk about what our conversation was like? We don't have to go into the specifics, but it might be interesting for the folks at home to kind of see what all we talked about and how the approach is for stuff.
It would be interesting for me because I was traveling, so I did not get to be part of that. I sent through a couple of notes because I'd finished the sound design, but I was like, oh, I'm not going to be in town, so you guys have at it. But I think that would be good, right? So let's put a pin in that, right? So episode 2, KOTOR Bastila Identity is out or is coming out. So go listen to that. We've got some music cues here, and then we'll sprinkle out some goodness for part 3, which will be coming out, you know, kind of towards, you know, the end of the year, first of next year, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we kind of listened to the whole thing and we kind of paused it. And I mean, you say you weren't there on the call, but we're just like, man, the sound design and sound effects are so good, you know? Because I think the only sound effects I was like, we needed to add our dying gonk noises, and one I will keep close to my chest, you know, until the time comes. But
we'll keep that for the actual behind the scenes episode for part 3.
Yeah. I guess I just like revealing things. It's fun.
You had the script for the sound design for part 3, and the only note on the whole script was our dying gonk noises possible. And I think so.
Made them possible. You made them a reality. What was only a dream.
If you can dream it, you can do it. That's the motto around here.
Yeah. So, and I think I was like, yeah, there'll probably only be a few themes in here, but did we kind of count at the end? And it's like, oh, this is 7 themes. No big deal.
Yes. seven cues of music.
Oh, okay.
Because the story beats for this. I'm the spoilers now. Can't talk about what it was. It's very much a sweeping tale. Let's say, and very much about kind of continuing off of where episode 2 leaves off in the relationship between Vinar and Bastila. And also so much action, so much work that Brian put into this, like we've said about the sound design and everything, and holy buckets. And so this is going to be a lot more action packed than episode 2. But basically, the conversations that you and I had were about where does the music start, where does it stop, and then figuring out specifically, like, in the moments, in the bigger, longer sequences of like, where because you could, there is a version of this where I just sit down and just score through the whole dang thing, but that makes Brian's job much harder in terms of putting the music in. So figuring out where, like, this bit of music ends, where this next one begins, and also like finding the big and the big part about spotting sessions is finding the moments of. For instance, if we go back to episode 2, like the when Vrook says, but you have proven yourself defiant, like, okay, that's, I got to put a pin on that one. I got to do, figure out Vinar's theme. Okay, Trask comes in here. And the more collaborative the conversation is between me and Cassia, the composer and the director, the more leeway I have to just hit it out of the park for what you guys want, with the exception of my Coruscant moment, but that's fine.
Yeah.
I realized, I was like, oh, let's talk about it, but I can't talk about a lot of the specifics because
yeah.
The episode ain't out yet.
Yeah. When we get closer to it in the future, I think we'll do another behind the scenes of like the music of Bastila Trust. So it'll be fun.
Yeah.
So
Twill.
Yeah. So we have some fun questions. Putting you in the hot seat, I guess.
Hot seat. But I'm standing up.
It's a pun.
Hot shoes.
Metaphor. Whatever. It's a thing.
I think it's both.
Yeah. So
I'll take some questions.
Okay.
Be happy to.
So, Marcus was asking, like,
here he comes.
Yep.
Sorry.
I think he had some questions about pineapple and pizza, and I'm like, I'm not asking that. So, so Marcus asks, like, what instrument do you think Darth Malak or Darth Bandon would play?
Ooh, I have thought about this. And for Malak, I think you'll hear it in the episode 3 of Trust is when I auditioned for Unreal Cinema's KOTOR project, my audition for that was actually scoring the Malak short that that he made. So I had to come up with a Malak theme for that, because of course, and that's how I do it. So you better believe we're porting that baby over. So it's I think for Malak, so much of it, it's kind of that Darth Vader thing of like more machine than man. So Malak, I think instrument and color wise inhabits this sort of muted brass, which is like a trombone or a trumpet that you stick something in the bell and it changes the sound, makes it smaller but also buzzier, this sort of distorted thing. I think so, yeah, muted brass, and then this really creepy sound that I found of like a choir of people inhaling, like just that sound.
Yeah.
But like with a bunch of people, and it's just the worst thing, but it's so effective. So to me, that's kind of Malak's sound. And then for Bandon, he's so the way that I came to know him was as Malak's attack dog, his sort of pit bull. So in the same way that Bastila had those sort of female choir whispery chanty bits, I think Bandon is a lot more similar to that primal side of things, but much more shouts, you know, male or a bass voice shout, syllabic kind of, you know, that kind of thing. I just blew up my speakers. But that sort of motif and so not really instrument. Oh, no, we did get some instruments with Malak, but hope that answers your question, Marcus.
Mm. The obvious answer was a harmonica for Malak, because
that's what I was thinking too.
because his jaw is basically the wraparound harmonica holder, so if he was performing live, he'd be able to do multiple instruments. But
he'd be great at piano, man.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like, let me harmonicize my feelings right now. Maybe if he did that, he wouldn't be so on the dark side, you know. So.
That's for KOTOR abridged. I just feel so sad about my situation.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the kind of genius that you know, you can expect in the Bastila audio drama.
That's really just why, you know, Cassie and I are definitely not in charge of doing the music.
Yeah, it would just be like a music video, if that. And then Marcus had one more question, and he's like, "Would you ever compose a Darth Bandon theme for funsies?"
For funsies. No, because it would just make me sad.
Okay.
If I'm being really honest.
Yeah.
It would make me sad to do so. But it would be fun. It would have been cool. All of the hopes, all of the things with the good old Unreal Cinema project. But I will say this. For episode 3 of this, for Trust, this is, I think, going to be the first time I've ever written music to something that I've been in as a voice actor. And it's going to be all kinds of disorienting to have to hear my own voice a bunch of times as I am writing music under it.
Well, you sound great, so.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. We could add like a Darth Malicky or Darth Vadery effect to your voice, but I was like, oh, it just sounds so good on its own. Like, it's kind of like you brought the harmonica jaw into it, you know? So you didn't have to do any sound effects or sound design or anything. So,
And I'm just looking this up right now, you know, because we like to do our research here at the Old Republic podcast. So if you're not willing to do a Darth Bandon theme, totally understandable. But since the game came out in 2003, and this sounds like Darth Bandon to me, Bring Me to Life was the number 10 song on the Billboard charts by Evanescence. I think that is the Darth Bandon theme.
That's a Bastila theme, personally.
So. I don't know.
We can fight on it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Darth Bandon playlist is like I think it's all baby metal and like Evanescence, all of the emo stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, I guess did you have any questions before we close, Brian?
No, I think we kind of ran through all of the musical bits here for part two. So I guess just kind of one closing question. You know, we kind of opened the episode asking you about kind of your music, you know, background. But just in general, Cassia comes to you and says, "Hey, what do you wanna score? You know, parts two and three of the Bastila audio drama." And you say, "Okay." And I'm assuming then that she sent you over like the script, and you start looking at that. Where, do you kind of start just at the beginning, or do you read the whole thing and you're like, oh, this would sound good here, and then kind of, you know, build off of that, or kind of bookend it and fill in the middle, or what does that process look like?
Well, I will say this was a bit of an unusual circumstance in that I saw the script as a voice actor before I saw them as a composer.
Oh, true. Yeah.
So I kind of I had an idea of the story. But for me, it's hard. And this is also just, I think I don't read books and hear music. For me, the music always starts with, listening or watching to kind of that, not final, 'cause there's no music in it, but that sort of picture locked sound effect up version of it. Because part of my job as a person who writes music is also finding the music in the, this is going to get nice and spiritual and esoteric, but it's finding the music in the cut, in what the editor, what you, Brian, have already put together, and then hearing that on top of that, rather than sort of reading it as a script. Because, you know, as you guys, I'm sure, also know, there's a huge difference between the lines that you write for dialogue in a script and then hearing an actor or a performer do it. You're like, oh, wow, there's so much more there. And maybe some stuff that I hadn't considered before. So for me, it starts with cut version, that first cut of it, and then the rest of it is always just—it's always has to be in collaboration with the director, because we're working together on something. It's a very different process, and actually a lot harder of a process for me to be like, I'm gonna go write music now. That's so much worse.
Yeah.
Than to be like, hey, let's do this thing together. So for me, yeah, it's the cut, and it's always the conversation, that spotting session, as we call it.
Yeah. And it's been a great experience, and I can tell how much you know music, how much you know Star Wars music, and it's been great to have you as a voice actor. It's been great to have you as a composer. And
thank you.
Where can our listeners find and support what you're doing?
Sure. Well, I am on Twitter. Twitter is, I'm calling it Twitter. I'm not calling it the other thing. But that is usually where I do most of the voice acting-y things. But you can find me there at Joseph D. Spence, VA. On the musical side of things, I have some stuff on the SoundClouds, both film score and film score-y stuff, and also some of the what we call the concert works, the music that I've written that, actual musicians have played. All of that is, a lot of that is on SoundCloud as well. Just type my name up, Joseph David Spence. You should find a little picture of a turtle writing a piece of toast. That's me.
Nice.
Shout out to Abigail Carey for making that art. It slaps. Where else? And yeah, in the near future, there may or may not be a way to listen to the music of this particular project separately. Teaser, teaser. So that's something we're talking about. No definite details on that yet. But yeah, I think I'm really proud of the music that I've done for this project and would love to get it out there to the world at large in a later time after the next episode's done.
Awesome. So thank you so much for your time. And I guess we can close the episode by saying may the John Williams music be with you always.
And also with you.
The Older Public Podcast can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, as well as everywhere else that Anchor Podcasts are distributed. Subscriptions, reviews, and shares help us out.
And if you want to connect with the podcast on Twitter, we can be found at Old Republic Pod. And if you want to connect with me, I can be found on Instagram at @astro_droid_.
You can find us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/Old Republic Podcast. Our intro and outro themes were composed by Dennis S. Mowers at DennisSMowersMusic.com.
This episode of the Old Republic Podcast has been brought to you by Nikki Dog from Patreon. May the Force be with you. We will be back soon. Bye for now.